Greetings, Race community. Brent coming in live with a special episode today, kind of a twist in our normal format. And I am pleased to welcome back to the podcast, Derek Dixon, who now serves as VP of University of Advancement at Colorado State University. Welcome, Derek.
Thanks, Brent. Good to see you again.
Well, look, longtime listeners of the show will remember that you joined us on episode 92, and you told us all about your journey to New Mexico State, growing up in eastern New Mexico, graduating with 28 people, and then eventually moving on from there to the technology industry and doing some time, big part of your career at Texas A&M as well. And so anybody that wants to get deep into the history can go and do that, but we wanted to make sure that we spend some time talking about what's new. And last time we caught up, you had just onboarded, I believe, in March of 2020 into your prior position leading the foundation. You've now been with Colorado State here over the last year and a half, so you onboarded in a very different context. And so with that, I'd love to just say welcome and sort of hear what's new.
Yeah, thanks. It was this one was a little more uneventful than the last one, that's for sure. That COVID onboarding was a journey. I came up to Colorado State University in April of last year, and we're in the process of planning CSU's third campaign. So that's been fun. We just launched a new Salesforce-based database. That was a heavy lift that the team had been working on for about 3 years. So it's fun to have that behind us. And it's a great team up here. We've got an advancement model where we handle everything from the fundraising to the Alumni Association to a bit uniquely at CSU, all of the presidential events and university ceremonies for Colorado State also. So it's a big shop, and it's a lot of wonderful people up here. Beautiful, as you know, really happy to be here.
Well, tell me more about the unique aspect of the presidential work. Why is that unique? It might strike me that that would make complete sense for every advancement shop, but maybe that's not the case.
Yeah, and it may just be unique in my experience and experience at Land Grant with my Land Grant peers across the country that I visited with. But we do we have a team that's basically part of the president's staff in the president's office. And I guess I should back up a little bit. We have a new president at CSU who started in January. I think I was her first hire from a search that I started in April. So the entire university leadership is new. And our president had a different way that she wanted to go about several things, including really elevating presidential events. She's very active, very visible, all the places, all the time. And so we created a new department, if you will, within advancement that we call Strategic Excellence. And it does several things, but it handles all of the presidential level events, the activations of the president's house, everything from convocation to commencement to the president's fall address, festivals, ceremonies, all of that kind of stuff. So there's a team that just is specifically working on that. And then there's a separate events team that does our university advancement, donor and alumni events and that kind of thing. I really like it. It allows us to be really strategic and pretty darn efficient in the work that we do. And it's just a little bit different. I think I've seen that be in maybe in the president's office or university Marcom or whatnot in the past. And I think it works pretty well here.
Well, I have to say I follow the president, Amy Parsons, and she is very active on social media as well. And I think really sets a standard, especially on X, formerly known as Twitter, in just giving you a window into what's going on, what she's focused on, where she is. And then I'm sure some of that has to be managed by a comms team as well, but it seems like a good blend of content that really gives you a window into her life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny on campus. You know, she's a bit of a celebrity. She's very recognizable, and just walking around campus, students, just, they want to have their picture with her. They just come up and meet and talk. And I think she gets a very unique perspective of our university from doing that. She also has a daughter that's a student here currently and another daughter that's going to come next year. So she's an alum. She worked here for many years as an employee. She, as a parent, just has a lot of wonderful perspectives on this place, and I really like the, you know, the fact that she's visible on social media, because it does give our, you know, our national and international alumni base a feel that they have that window onto campus that's maybe a little bit unique.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a great model that others should follow. Just give me a sense of, as you've settled into the role, how you think about joining a new institution. There's so much to take in. You can't learn it all. There's got to be a period of just sort of auditing the status quo, trying to develop some sort of perspective on strengths and weaknesses, opportunities, threats. I mean, how did you approach, let's call it, your first 100 days or so, given all of that change you were describing?
Yeah. When I got to CSU, we were still kind of coming out of the COVID mode. We were not really having in-person things as much. I believe my first week here in April of 2024, when we first got here, we were having a milestone celebration where we celebrate years of service of our staff. And we did that in person in a ballroom on campus. And a comment was made to me that it was the first time that our advancement staff had been together for something since 2019. And of course, at the school that I was coming from, we had kind of started doing that back in, you know, 2021 or so. So that was interesting to hear. And one of the comments was that people really love that. I mean, they like each other. People here have, it's a great culture. People love their colleagues and their coworkers, and they wanted to be around each other more. So we intentionally started scheduling our staff meetings to be in person. And we've got 30 different teams across advancement. So when those teams meet, we said, you can have a hybrid option, but let's do something in person. And I think people have really enjoyed that. We've been doing a ton of in-person things. Of course, all of our events and whatnot have been in person for a while. It was just kind of our UA staff, and having those informal opportunities for people to get together and meet and talk and just have the, you know, the hallway conversations, that sort of thing, I think was missing a little bit. They were being really you know, really productive remotely, and people love that. We still have, I think, over 80% of our staff have some sort of a hybrid work plan. So we're trying to kind of lean into the strengths of both of those models and just do more, you know, do more in person again. And I think it's worked pretty well.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because yeah, I think everybody's kind of recalibrated around some mix of hybrid, varying ends of the spectrum. And I think there's a version of that that applies to the staff, the team interaction. And then I think there's a version of that that applies to donor interactions as well, as sort of what's the right mix of virtual versus in-person for donors. And I know that one of the stories you've shared in the past is that, pre-pandemic, before virtual was as in vogue as it is now, you all were doing really creative things back at Auburn, for example, to connect your dean, I think the dean in a box or something like that, the Zoom connection in a small group setting to the dean, which clearly brought efficiencies and helped you all raise a lot of money. Even prior to maybe donors being conditioned to do these things virtually.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I'd kind of forgotten about that. You know, it's interesting. We're asking our development teams here at CSU to get out on the road more, travel more, do those in-person meetings with donors more again, kind of get back into that, say, 2018, 2019 pace of travel. But I don't think you lose the efficiency, you know, that we gained during COVID of doing some of those discovery visits and some of those in between conversations and whatnot over Zoom or Teams. And it's a great mix. I don't know that I'm super comfortable in the world of development where we need these really strong one-to-one, you know, trust-based, authentic relationships with people being entirely digital. There's something to be, you know, still to be gained from that proximity with each other and just, you know, sitting across a table and sharing a meal and that sort of thing. So we're trying to, you know, to get back into the pace of doing that more again, while not losing the efficiencies that we gained from doing those teams
Well,
introductory.
Tell me a little bit more about that as it relates to metrics, because my understanding is you're setting a very clear, quantifiable goal as it relates to things like visits. And I'd be curious to know which aspects of that mean, physical field visits versus virtual from a, crediting perspective. But just tell me about the vision for metrics and where we go from here.
We changed up our metrics quite a bit over this past year. We have a great leadership team here in advancement, and we have co-leads, co-AVPs over the development shop, both of which have been fundraisers for a really long time. They're really good. They both kind of come up through CSU, so they understand the people and the culture really well. And it was fun to work with them on a new metrics program. I also went to a conference this last year called the Big Ten Fundraising Institute, and it was phenomenal. I met one of the guys that I had heard about in this business for a really long time that runs the advancement shop at Northwestern. Started his career in Colorado, and I heard him do a presentation over metrics and managing fundraisers and whatnot, and bought a copy of his book and came back and met with our team and said, we don't think we can do this exactly the same as Northwestern has, but they've experienced, 12 years of success with this model. There's something to be said for it. We pulled together our development leadership, and we talked about implementing something like, so we came up with, for lack of a better term, the Northwestern scorecard for CSU that measures things like dollars raised, solicitations, visits, all of your typical things, but we weighted them. And at Northwestern, they had weighted gifts closed really heavily. I think that was the majority of the weighting was on how many gifts you closed. Here at CSU, we weighted dollars raised. I think 50% is on dollars raised, and then you've got a percentage on how many solicitations you had, how many visits you did. We broke out qualification visits because we wanted each fundraiser to be a qualifier, to be bringing people into their pipeline over time. So we asked that 20% of your overall visits be qualification visits, that sort of thing. We do credit if you have a meaningful one-on-one, visit like we're having here today with the donor, you can count that as a visit, but I think it's capped. I don't remember the exact percentage. It's probably 20% of your visits or so can be done over Zoom. But we did a bit of a cap because we wanted people to get out and be spending time together. But I really like that that model that our colleague at Northwestern put together, David Lively, if anybody wants to look up his book. And we thought we would try something like that here.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned David, and also would recommend listening to episode 161 of the Raise podcast, where David joined us. He is the ultimate accidental fundraiser. I mean, for how much he has shaped our profession, it was just amazing to hear his journey and just kind of stumbling into the space and stumbling into the space, and at the same time making a major impact and raising a tremendous amount of money. And so let's talk a little bit about that goal of ultimately scaling relationship building through a mix of virtual, but leaning on in-person visits as well. And let's talk a little bit about your evolving view of how technology can support that. And we usually don't talk too much about Evertrue's technology on this podcast, but I think given your perspective, it would make sense to do so today, especially because you've been navigating one of the, I think, real structural changes that's happening in the industry, which has been a growing shift to Salesforce as a platform. And with that, I think many leaders have been trying to navigate that transition, generally away from platforms like Ellucian and Blackbaud that have been the standards in the industry for decades, to platform Salesforce, which has been the standard in most other industries. But with that is a tremendous amount of change, and it can be a confusing process. But you've had to sort of help shape that roadmap relative to the goals that you just outlined. And I'm really fortunate that to share that you've made the decision to layer Evertrue Signal platform onto the Ascend platform via Salesforce. And I'd love to just talk a little bit about how you think about the sort of all-in-one version of Salesforce versus more of a best-in-class model. And we're fortunate to have spent, you know, time together over several years, but many other leaders are sort of in your same position trying to navigate that same thought process.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting evolution for sure. We're not at the cutting edge of it at CSU. We're following some brave universities that went ahead of us and implemented this technology, including CU Boulder, just down the road from us. And I'll have to give them props. We spent a lot of time learning from CU Boulder and their experience rolling out the Salesforce-based platform, the same one that we're using. We're using the UCI Ascend app that's on top of Salesforce. And I think CU Boulder was maybe one of the first universities to implement that system. And boy, they learned a lot of lessons. And it was amazing how they were willing to sit down and share those with us. We look at these, at your rival universities through athletic lenses sometimes. But when you get with the development and advancement and foundation leadership, it's wonderful the communications that we can have and the learning that we can have. And so we were able to learn a lot from CU Boulder and others that had been ahead of us in this process. And I think tweak some of our processes to try to not recreate some of the mistakes that they had seen happen. There's maybe a couple things that I would share with you. One is we were told that you really need to bring your university leadership into this process early and help them understand what a transition from a 25-year-old database with, you know, thousands of custom reports and thousands of custom giving pages and just all the things that had been built on that old system, when that all goes away and you launch a minimum viable product, it's going to be different. And there's going to be changes in how they go about their daily work. And there's going to be things that you could do before that you can't do now. There's going to be things you can do now that you couldn't do before. And really bringing our deans, our vice presidents, our other partners across the university that use the database together and helping them to understand that, I think was something that we did that we maybe wouldn't have otherwise. We also helped them to understand that this is going to take at least a year to reach stability within this database. Just because you flip the switch and go live doesn't mean everything's going to work perfectly. And we were also replacing every other piece of technology that we use in advancement along with this database. So we've got a new system for people to RSVP for events. And, our annual giving platform is changing. Everything's changing. And so it was a pretty big transition. We were planning Colorado State University's third campaign. And so as we go into that, we wanted our fundraising teams to have the best possible technology to enter into that campaign with. And that's, one of many reasons that we decided to layer Evertrue on top of our new database. We had just heard from, peers around the country at the benefits that adds, our social media presence we talked about earlier with our president and other accounts around campus. We wanted to have some visibility into that your product offers. We want our fundraisers to, hopefully be able to kind of live in that platform. But I think it's going to help in other ways. I mean, you asked earlier about the first 100 days. We do about 400 events a year through advancement here, whether they're alumni events, donor events, just all kinds of events. We do those things all over the country. And so I spent a lot of my first year just traveling, trying to go to as many of those things as I could and meet as many people as I could, meet all of our internal teams and talk to them. And I think when we look at Evertrue, when our team was looking at it before a couple of years ago, they were looking at this as being kind of an annual giving platform. And when I got here, I said, well, okay. But at Auburn, we used it in major gift fundraising also. And here's all the things that it helped with. And that was like 6 years ago, right? I'm sure it's evolved since then. And the more that we learned about it, I think it's going to touch, several of our teams are going to be able to do their work more efficiently and better just by having, great technology. And I think that the Salesforce and UCI Ascend systems offer some of that, but it's not all of it. The other thing that we noticed is there's a lot of kind of built-in reporting and functionality that we would have to create within Ascend. It doesn't come native out of the box. And, a year's worth of development work or we could just implement this other system in 3 months and not have to rebuild it, right? So I think there was some very intentional decision making on our part about what do we get out of the box here versus out of the box there, and what do we have to custom create versus just use this thing that already exists. And it was a great little analysis. We've got a really good team here that analyzes technology with us, and everybody came away thinking that this was going to be a real plus across our whole organization.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And it's, many other leaders are trying to navigate that as well. Now, that all being said, this is the way it's played out in other industries. There's over 4,000 apps like Evertrue that integrate with Salesforce in almost every industry under the sun. But it's so new in the advancement sector that philosophy and landscape just isn't as mature yet. That being said, I think a lot of what you described, the ability to support collaborative trip planning, collaborative event strategies, even this idea of outbound cadence management to get people to events. And then after the event, what is the follow-up system so that we're converting that event not just into engagement, but into meetings that lead to proposals, that lead to revenue, and that we're tracking that end to end. And those are areas that we're seeing just tremendous opportunities to complement Salesforce and Ascend. And to that end, I think the other thing that I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about is just mobile. You've already said you want your team to be out in the field doing more field visits. I know that you personally have traveled to over 50 countries, if I'm not mistaken. So like being, you're in front of your computer today, but there's a lot of days you're not. And a big area that we've been focusing on is how do we layer in the best mobile experience so that people are as effective or even more effective on the go? And then certainly there's this whole AI wave right now that is going to, we think, streamline even more of the manual work that people do today.
Yeah, no, I think you're so right. I mean, you and I are sitting in, a desk with our nice big monitors and whatnot right now, and I spent the majority of my career as a fundraiser, and when you can do your work on this screen, it's so much easier. If I can leave a donor meeting and sit in a parking lot and enter my contact report and just all the things. You mentioned collaborative trip planning. I mean, that's one thing that we're really struggling with here. We have university leadership that we are really blessed. They want to be with donors. Our president, our provost, our vice president of research, our deans, they've all been on donor visits with us. Donors really like them. We want to take advantage of that. But I'll give you one example. We're playing University of Texas in Austin for our opening football game this fall, and so we're going to spend an entire week just doing a tour of Texas. And we're going to have, I'm not even sure how many fundraisers down there, but at least five fundraisers that are going to go down and be doing donor visits around all of the alumni activities and everything. And so collaborative trip planning is a huge deal for us, and we're trying to manage it in like a spreadsheet or something. I mean, it's hard to do if you don't have the right technology. And so we're l really looking forward to the ability to collaboratively plan trips with our university partners and our alumni team. Because that's just the way you have to do business now, and
I love it.
I think having access to mobile capabilities is gonna really up our game.
Yeah, I'm going to make sure that your team, so we're recording this on June 18th. On June 26th, we're hosting a webinar with the Oklahoma State University, a bunch of folks on the frontline team there, and they have done such an amazing job as it relates to leveraging Evertrue on top of Ascend for collaborative trip planning. And so I'm going to make sure that your team gets invited to that personally, Derek, because it is just so reflective of really even the opportunity to convert alumni engagement and alumni relations activities into pipeline, to have more coordination across multiple departments around a university. And then even as you talk about presidential engagement, one of my favorite moments ever leading Evertrue was when the former president of Oklahoma State University asked for access to Evertrue's mobile app so that he could be better briefed on donors when he was out and about at events and so forth. So we might have to check that out for President Parsons.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I enjoy the 5 a.m. text message to a briefing on this donor that she's having coffee with, that would be that would
Right.
be wonderful. I mean, that's the things we can do with technology these days,
And
right?
here's the thing is not only can we equip her and others with that information on their phone so Instead of even needing to send the text, they can just look at the profile. But as you know, that's where generative AI, I think, is going to be so transformational, because now we've got decades of contact reports, decades of event attendance, of transactional giving history, of endowed fund data that historically, even in Evertrue, you had to go and dig around to really get the full picture. We can now synthesize that with generative AI. If you want to ask somebody for a visit, we can look through all that history and reach out to somebody. And by the way, Derek, as I've been referencing things like you growing up with 28 people in your graduating class and the fact that you've traveled to over 50 countries, it's not because I have the greatest memory. It's because we've leveraged generative AI to summarize the key points in our interactions with you and other leaders so that we can personalized conversations like this one. And I think that, like, if I can know that about you, there's no reason that President Parsons can't have that on her phone as she goes about her day. And then as we're trying to book a visit or follow up on a visit, AI can help assist us. We've still got to authentically deliver the message, but all of that manual hunting and pecking should go away.
Yeah. I mean, it's a brave new world, Brent, right? I mean, this is it's incredibly exciting. That's, yet another reason that we said, we can gain so much efficiency in our coordinator staff, in our research staff, by being able to utilize the technology that's available and being used everywhere else in the world. We need to be using that in advancement. This business is too important not to. And I think our professionals that choose to do this work and our university partners, I think they're just going to be blown away with the level of service that we can provide.
Well, I agree completely. And, just let me ask you for a minute. You lived through the dot-com boom and bust, and now you're seeing everything that's happening around AI. And Apple's just announced their approach to this. OpenAI has been growing like a rocket ship. NVIDIA has become almost a household name overnight. Anybody around public equity markets, like, does it make you nervous or does it make you excited as you think about the dot-com boom that you lived through?
Yeah, no, there's no nervousness about it. It's totally excitement, Brent. I was in Seattle at a small startup software company during that time. So yeah, we lived through it. It was not a pleasant thing to live through, but it was incredible the disruption in how we did business before. I mean, I have only been in the professional world for a little over 20 years, and we've seen the internet disrupt everything and recreate the way that we do business everywhere. When I remember my first job, I was still having to like send and receive fax. Like, we don't even do that anymore. And email changed the world, and having a website changed the world, having a mobile app, changed everything. And this, this generative, this the AI technology to me is incredibly exciting, I think, if we get it right, because I just the it feels like we're at the tip of the iceberg. We're just starting to taste what might be possible. And I can save hours drafting a document by putting the right prompt into ChatGPT, right? And I think we'll probably look back in 5 years and be like, wow, that was the Model T. Look where we are now. But it is really cool for our teams. And I was talking with a colleague at the University of Wyoming. They said they're the content that they use for to send out to alumni is all drafted through ChatGPT. It's not that that's the final product, but the first draft comes out of there. And I was just thinking about my work. I mean, I use it to first draft a whole lot of stuff, right? And then you can edit it and improve on it, or throw it away and start over, or put in a new prompt or whatever. But my provost and I, when she first joined us a couple months ago from Purdue, one of the first things we wanted to do was draft a one-page document that we would send out to all of our faculty about how faculty can be great partners with advancement. and how we can work together. And we had our ideas, we had our topical sections and that sort of thing. And, you know, through a couple of ChatGPT prompts, we ended up with, you know, a one pager of some bullet points that was a whole lot more concise. And actually, it suggested a couple of things we hadn't thought about that we ended up including. And, you know, it was just one of those things where we took this idea of something we wanted to create, and it might have taken a day of editing, you know, collaborative creation of this thing. And I think we had it done in 2 hours. You know,
Right.
it was pretty amazing. So I'm excited about where we're going.
I think that I mean that is exactly reflective of where we have to go for fundraising relationship building. Yeah, you know, if you look at a pie chart of a fundraiser's time, how much of it is spent actually doing the thing that we know really makes a difference, which is connecting one-on-one with donors, right? And how much of it is spent doing administrative follow-up, writing, drafting, and we can take that part of the pie chart and compress it through leveraging technologies in the way that you're describing, it should free up way more time for that relationship building, which we know will align with your, I think, 7,000 visit goal across the team and how that then converts into proposals and revenue. And so it's a really, you're right. It's just the very beginning. It is so exciting. And to me, that's where it feels very different than some of the other hype cycles that we've been through, or the dot-com boom and bust, because there is major value being created, not just hypothetically, but it actually is being created already. There's revenue being generated by those platforms, which I think will then support further investment and scaling of this work. And yeah, there's just so many opportunities. I think, unlike a lot of businesses, though, the lifelong nature of donor relationships is particularly well suited to this AI transformation. There aren't a lot of businesses that you spend 50 years of your life transacting with. And, or if you do, it's in a very transactional thing at one specific price point without all of the nuance that we have in this sector. And I've been thinking about it in four different buckets, and I'd love your reaction to this, but we think about generative AI for advancement and the way that we're harnessing it at Evertrue is there's sort of four different data pillars. The first is private donor data, all that information that we've had locked up in our CRMs forever. The second is public donor data, right? All this information about who people are, the new job that they got, the digital engagement, are they following President Parsons or not? There's all of this public footprint, web articles about people, news articles, and so forth, that we can now mash up with the private donor data to have a more complete view, which is what researchers have been doing for decades, but it's just been very manual in nature. And then when you add in public institutional data, all of the programs and the content, the websites, the events that are happening, and private institutional data, campaign priorities, initiatives, research needs, faculty expertise, and you mash all of that up, it should be really easy to say, given what we know about Derek, private, public, and what we know about the institution, private and public, here are the top two or three ways we might want to engage him.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it feels a heck of a lot more impactful than here's your list of prospects, start at the A's, right? And that's where most of us that have been around for a while doing this work, it wasn't that long ago. Like, here's your list of prospects, start at the top and just start calling them, you know? And you know, you could read contact reports, but if there was 100 contact reports, that takes a while. You know, you could look back at their gift history, but if they've been giving robustly for a while, I mean, that it's just I think it's going to take it's going to make us much more efficient and effective at the work that we do. You know, just the summary, the few things that you've mentioned since we've been talking today. I mean, I'm like, how did Brent remember those things? You know, that was some side comment in a podcast we did 2 years ago, you know, and that makes a difference when you're talking to donors, right? And
Well,
so,
imagine, you know, but then when you think about the handoffs, right? I mean, how many times I had a fundraiser say, I think it was Nick down in Northern Arizona. He was saying that one of the things he loves to do is go look for the first contact report, the first discovery visit, because that usually is the best one. It's the first time that somebody sits down and tells their story. But actually getting back to that part of the database takes forever. It's super inefficient. And so it's like, Well, let's take the most important nuggets that people have shared over their lives and just pull it up to the top. And then I think there's going to be an opportunity for conversational experiences. So I can go back and forth with Evertrue the same way I can with ChatGPT. Did Derek mention anything about his family? You know, do we know anything about dietary preferences? I mean, these are examples that have come up recently, but you know, if somebody has mentioned long ago that they have a specific dietary preference and you're a fundraiser trying to book a lunch with them, why wouldn't we want to work that dietary preference into the lunch suggestions that we make? Impossible to do if you're going to go do that manually. We think now not only possible, but the way it can be done at scale going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think our young, you know, entry-level fundraisers that we hire in the future are going to expect this, right?
Yeah.
They are not going to go back and plow through 100 contact reports and you know, 500 gift records. They are going to expect this because they're going to be digital natives and they're going to be used to it, and they will have used it throughout their high school years. And so I think it's incredibly important that we stay up with the technology. And this one feels like a good one. I mean, it does feel like it adds real value and real efficiency, and it'll allow our people then to shift their time to higher value tasks, which you know, with university, you know, budgets and just, you know, all of the pressures on our time and money, it feels like we do need to keep getting more efficient.
Derek, do you have any advice for me and our team as we navigate this changing landscape, the CRM transition? I mean, we've been on this journey for many years together now, but what advice do you have for me? And when you think about vendor partnerships that have been most successful for you over the years, I mean, what should I reinforce with our team?
Well, I've really appreciated the way that you know, this conversation might have started with you and I. It might have started with some of your staff, but it's really permeated our entire team. I was, you know, last week, I wasn't in any of the meetings when your team was here getting ready to implement this system, but I, you know, looked in the window a couple of times, and we had you know, leaders from across our organization meeting with your team, understanding the product, understanding the process, understanding, you know, what it's going to allow us to do, how we need to train, just all the things. And I think that that relationship across our organization is healthy. There's so many vendor relationships that I've had over the years where it kind of, you know, it starts maybe at our level and we have this agreement, we sign a paper, and then, you know, everything goes to shit as you try to implement it, right? And so I think we want to make sure that our teams have a great experience from the word go, especially while they're still trying to implement our new database and all of the other apps and everything. And your team has made this really easy, I think, for us so far to visualize how we're going to do this lift on top of this heavy lift we've still got going on. And something I really do appreciate. I don't think that the technology is going to slow down though, Brent. I mean, we're talking about generative, you know, AI right now, but AI is being built into everything. And I don't have any clue what the world's going to look like 3 years from now, but it feels good to have a partner who comes to work every day thinking about that and thinking about how we keep on the, you know, on the cutting edge, and how this product that now we've invested in, along with, you know, dozens of our peer institutions, we kind of don't have to worry about that so much because you and your team are worrying about that and you're evolving this system and it's going to get better over time. And a previous database that I was on at two other schools for a really long time, like, they just stopped upgrading. You know, and it got to the point, I think it's, I don't even know if it's supported anymore. You know, it was kind of a, this cash cow that's just dying and going away because it wasn't evolving. And it feels good to have, you know, to have partners that we have now in our technology space that are trying to disrupt their own technology with what's coming next. And I think that that feels good. That would be the only piece of advice that I have, is keep up with all of that. Because that's not what we are good at within a university setting, but it is what you're good at.
I appreciate you saying that. I will share that with my team. And that's the way that we thought about our work at Evertrue, is how can we be the bridge to whatever the next tech wave is? How can we translate the next tech change into this world of advancement? And, you know, I think about John Morris and some of the things I've learned from him over the years. And he just is able to simplify it. He says, look, if you're a frontline fundraiser, you should be getting visits, conducting visits, or following up on visits. Yep. And so I agree with that, by the way, but I look at it And then it's the question is, how can technology get us visits? How can technology help us conduct better visits because we have more of the history at our fingertips? And how can technology help automate the following up on visits, which is usually where things start to fall apart? And the way that we can do that in a Gen AI world is different than the way we could 5 years ago or 5 years before that. But when social media came on the scene, it was how do we translate that for advancement? When mobile happened, how do we translate that for advancement? And now, how do we translate this next wave of Gen AI for advancement? Now, here's the thing. I'm telling you, this August 31st football game, Colorado State versus Texas, we are going to have the best collaborative trip planning case study coming out of that. Okay, that is my commitment. I am sure that we are going to make that happen, and we will make sure to follow up for this discussion with your team to
Yeah.
just have that as an early win, because there is no more spreadsheets. We can
Yeah.
move past that. We can scale it to the entire team and make it right here on everybody's phone when they're walking around Austin and they need to quickly get a snapshot of who somebody is when they walk into that event.
Yeah. And Brett, we're going to win that game, by the way. I don't know how your sports betting game is, but if you want the call of the year, I'll make that. We'll make that call here today. I think we're taking it. Talk.
Bold call. That's why we do these conversations. Yeah, look, I'll wrap up, Derek. The last thing I'll say, though, is you did mention peers, right? And there's a growing peer group of institutions, folks you know well that are leveraging Evertrue in similar ways or about to. And I do think one of the last areas that I'll just ask for your perspective on is benchmarking, because we are now sitting on a pretty massive aggregate data set, and it doesn't feel like anybody has really nailed the real-time benchmarking yet. I know there have been varying degrees of consultants that do focus groups or surveys that Case puts on. Does it matter? I mean, should we go attack real-time benchmarking? I mean, I'd love to have a dashboard of like visits by day across the entire industry, right? There's no reason we shouldn't be able to look at visit metrics or annual giving metrics, slicing and dicing among peers in a somewhat real-time manner. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I love it. We spend a lot of I'm an economist, so maybe I can't help it, but I put a lot of energy into benchmarking, data analysis, making database decisions, that sort of thing. And we spend a lot of time, energy, and money doing these benchmarking studies that they're usually based on fiscal year data, and you get it back 7 months later. So we're looking backwards 7 months, 7, 8 months, to try to figure out where were we then. Well, we're not even the same organization we were then. We've this organization industry, changes a lot. You've got people, coming and going. You've got different changes that you made, whatnot. So real-time benchmarking, I think, would be interesting, exciting, for us. I also think our people, especially our fundraisers, I mean, they're competitive, right? I mean, you've got entire take the fitness industry. You can go to a gym and you can compete with somebody while you're riding a bike, right? And so people want to gamify and compete. I think you want to win. You want to win, be on a winning team. And I think if we can provide meaningful metrics in where it's fun, where it doesn't feel like I'm just sitting here, doing all this work and I don't know whether I'm succeeding or not, but you have some idea on a day-to-day basis whether the work that you're doing is moving you in the right direction to be successful in the goals that have been set, and even how to set your goals, right? I mean, how to meaningfully set goals that are going to move the organization forward. What you just mentioned, I don't know what you're working on, but I'm really excited about the ability to have more real-time metrics and benchmarking. I agree with you. On our Blackbaud system that I used previously, they had some data that was pulled from, I don't really know where it came from, but it showed you how you compared to others. I don't know if those were necessarily peers or if that was just everybody that was using, Blackbaud Razor's Edge. So, but even that, not really knowing where the data, came from, it was helpful just to have the data. So I think that's, I think that's smart. I think it's something that we would definitely, look at using. I think our team is motivated by goals. They're motivated to achieve their goals. They want to feel like it's realistic. They want to know where we are, where it feels like we're going to end the year, that sort of thing. And so, yeah, that would be cool.
Well, I'm going to come back to you on that. I mean, look, on this call, you've mentioned CU Boulder, you mentioned Wyoming, right? Just there's other peers as well. And it just seems crazy to me that there's not a way to get a sense of how we're doing. And then based on your description and reminder of the weighted scorecard model from David Lively, I'm picturing like a cloud-based version of that across the entire sector. I'm gonna, check my dreaming for a minute here yet, but it feels like we can get there. And I'm grateful for your partnership along the way. And I can't wait to see the results of that football game.
Yeah. Ditto. If you're ever in Fort Collins, stop by to see us.
All right. Hey, with that, I'm going to wrap today's episode featuring Derek Dixon, who leads advancement at Colorado State University. Thanks, Derek, and take care, everybody.